Who the bloody hell's that?
Morning, Ange.
Oh, Anthony. How are we?
I'm really well. How are you?
Come on in.
I will do, thank you.
Did that sound staged?
Just a little.
No, it'll be fine, yeah.
I'm going to embrace the whole lounge pant thing next time. I'm going to put my University of New Hampshire lounge pants on.
You should indeed.
You're listening to the Corona Diaries, a sometimes random and often irreverent attempt to understand the psyche of singer Steve Hogarth.
You happy with that?
Yeah, unfortunately my airways are full of clag. But hopefully they'll clear at some point during the pod.
I was going to say, you know, the first thing I was going to say to you this morning was, I think it's very healthy for our relationship that you go away and do all these things, you know, as and when you go on boats and you lark about with bassists and sailors and all that kind of thing.
I do
like it when I've got you back home.
Well, what goes on tour stays on tour. Darling.
Well, there's a lot of that.
I don't want to talk about me and the captain.
It was a big act, wasn't it?
It was. It didn't suit me, did it?
Not well.
I've always looked like a twat in hats.
A twat in a hat.
I haven't got a face for it.
Neither have I. I think if we had this conversation, I look terrible in hats.
Yeah, I've never found one yet that doesn't make me want to remove it immediately.
Would you like to look good in a baseball cap? Because I would love to look good in a baseball cap.
No.
You wouldn't?
No, I'd like to look good in a captain's hat, but I didn't. What other kind of hat would I like to look good in? Oh, I don't know. A balaclava.
I'm not saying anything about that.
I haven't even got a face for one of those SAS ones with the eye holes.
You'd be like Russ Abbott in the SAS.
Yes, or somebody gayer.
What about, could you not have...
What, you want me to go over there? I'll catch me death. What, without a cushion? Yeah.
Could you not have a hat inserted in post?
Well, what difference is that going to make?
Well, for a picture. So you could give off the illusion of looking good in a hat by having a hat photoshopped in.
I'd need another face. I'd have to photoshop another face in under it.
Actually, that's not a bad idea.
And then who's going to want another face with a body like mine? I'd need another body. And basically, I would have gone.
What was that game when we were kids where you had different bits of the bodies you used to put together on, like, cardboard cards?
I don't know. I'm thinking of Mr. Potato Head, but it wasn't that, was it?
No,
it was where you stuck things in a potato.
We finally just got rid of our Mr. Potato Head, actually. That's just gone from under Jack's bed.
Yeah, he probably looked better in a hat than I do and all.
Jack looks very good in a hat. So does Josh. It's really annoying.
No, I'm on about Mr. Potato.
Oh, yeah. Well, he did. He had a cap, didn't he? And he looked very good in those green earrings as well.
Well, I'd probably look all right in green earrings.
I could see you. Have you ever had your ears pierced?
No. No, because it was all the rage when I was growing up.
Right.
And therefore, they would have put me against the wall before I would have done it. Being wired up that way, you know.
Right, and that's been your entire life, hasn't it?
What, kicking against whatever's going on?
Yeah.
Yeah. That hasn't changed, really.
Have you ever embraced a fad?
No.
Not one?
None that I can think of.
Didn't have a fidget spinner or?
No, Vibes had a lot of those. I had a go on them. Did I have clackers? Do you remember clackers? You probably don't, do you? My sister's had them.
I'd like to see you in a pair of, were they called Heelys, those shoes that had the wheels in the back?
I have it on good authority that Prince had a pair of those shoes with the lights in that came on when you walked.
Right.
You know, those things that kids wear.
Yeah, they get from Clark's, don't you?
Yeah, I think Prince had a pair of them. Man, he did have very small feet, so he probably fitted in.
And I bet he looked great in a hat. Well, he did look great in a hat.
Well, yeah, he did. He did. He wore that little red bowler hat when he went on stage and blew everybody else off and was, well, My Guitar Gently Weeps.
That's an amazing video.
Much to the delight of Danny Harrison. I've never seen a kid looking so delighted. But then you would, wouldn't you? You'd just go, oh.
That happened then.
Here I was having a good time and Prince came on. Holy shit. Even Danny Harrison looked starstruck at that point.
Imagine looking on from the side at what was going on that stage, being Prince and going, I know what this needs. It's all right, you know, but I know what it needs.
I know what it needs. First of all, I need to dress up in a red suit with a red bowler hat. And then I need a couple of security men out front so that when I lean back, I can take my body weight. Yeah, and then I need someone to catch this guitar and I casually throw it into the air at the end. He was something, wasn't he?
Oh.
He really was.
And that guitar, that Hohner guitar that he plays, is literally a couple of hundred quid's worth. Probably not even that.
Is it?
Yeah, it was nothing of nothing. It stayed with him his entire career and it wasn't anything. I know he had a lot of the flamboyant stuff made and what have you, but that one, which was ever present, that was just a bog standard basic plank.
What was it? Was it a telly?
It was a Hohner telly with blonde telly with a leopard skin scratch plate.
Then it wasn't even a Fender.
No, it was just a Hohner one. It was just literally a copy, a couple hundred quid at most.
Amazing. It must have just felt good.
Yeah.
And of course he'll have had all the pickups and the electronics changed.
I don't think it would have made any difference. I think it's just in his fingers. I think he was just ungodly or not of this earth. Sorry, not ungodly, godly and not of this earth.
Godly. In an ungodly sort of way, with a Bible in one hand and a vibrator in the other, as somebody once said, which I never forgot.
That's a great phrase. We ought to have that on a T-shirt.
That was Prince. Bible in one hand and a vibrator in the other.
You need that on a T-shirt.
I know. What was it? I was going to get a T-shirt that just said, I didn't pay to see me.
I think I might have one of them, actually. I've not paid to see you for ages.
No, you haven't paid to see yourself.
Well, no, there is that. I would do. I'd pay to see me if I look good in a hat.
Oh, what did Lennon say? You'll be so... You'd pay money just to see yourself with Dr. Robert. I thought that was a good line.
Shall we start?
I thought we had. I'm recording, darling.
Well, no, I'm recording as well. I'm not obviously as per normal. It will all stay in. But shall we start proper?
We have learned something, haven't we?
In all of this. Yeah, it took us about 150 episodes to remember to press record.
That was basically what we've learned.
I can't believe I'm saying this, but this is 201, isn't it?
It begins and ends there. Yes, I've learned that as well. Well, this morning.
This morning. Right. Okay. Hello and welcome to chapter 201 of the Corona Diaries.
Yay!
Which means we're nearly a year away from the next milestone. I find that a little depressing.
I'm going to get a T-shirt. The Corona Diaries, as old as the Sphinx. Just for the 4,000th episode, you know, commemorative T-shirt.
We might outlive the band.
I think that's fucking highly likely. You don't know the weekend I've had.
I have to say, when you came on this morning, you did look a little bleary.
Oh, bleary. Well, yes, it's because I'm slightly jet-lagged. I was up all night last night. I was up... Well, I stayed in bed all night the night before last, awake. And then last night I stayed in bed all night, awake. Oh, no, that's what I said the night before.
Yeah, that was exactly the same as the previous night. Routine's not changed that much. So you're not sleeping then?
That's another way of putting it.
Uh, Has it been a hard transition back?
Well, funny, you know, because I felt like it wasn't. I thought, oh, yeah, I've got away with that. In fact, I'm beginning to wonder if I ever entered American time at all, and maybe I've just stayed in Europe in my head. And I thought, oh, I've got away with that. Nonsense, of course. I can't bloody sleep, and I'm absolutely shattered all day long. But that's all it is. It's just the usual jet lag. It'll fade away in a haze of gin at some point.
Mm.
Oh, well, can I tell you something that you'll have to edit out, or I will?
Yeah, go on. Tell me something we'll have to edit out, or you will.
We shouldn't announce that.
No, let's not announce it, but oh my God. We could leave it in and just bleep out the name so people don't know.
We could do that.
Which talks to your connections, obviously.
Talked to my connections, exactly.
Yeah.
I talk to my connections. That's another T-shirt.
So, right, loads of things from the cruise, loads of things to talk to you about. And apologies, folks, if you wanted something with real, you know, content this morning, it's not, it's all going to be gossip, but all stuff that's come out. First things first, though, you were clambering around playing with your equipment, weren't you, when we came on?
I was, yes. I had to replumb my wires and my whatnots.
Now, 201 episodes in, plus plenty of bonus content, I think you can probably consider yourself a podcaster now.
Oh dear. What does that mean? Will I need an outfit?
Well, no, it's fine. It's
that's
fine.
Right.
The beauty of podcasting is it's a non-visual art form. But what it does mean is, to save you having to do all that clambering about and messing about and this, that and the other, you need a mobile rig.
Oh.
You're going to have to replicate your rig for mobile.
Do you know what I need? There used to be these blokes when I was train spotting when I was a kid who had lots of enamel train-shaped badges down one lapel. I certainly will need some of those, I think, for, you know, that's my idea of what a podcaster looks like. Someone with a lot of enamel badges down his lapels.
I was going to suggest that
you had... A mobile rig.
Well, no, there's that. I'm coming to that. Maybe instead of that kind of jacket thing with loads of pockets that the badges would go on, maybe one of those lanyards that signifies a hidden disability, and then you could put your podcast badges on that.
Oh, I don't like lanyards because I have to wear those, you know, in theory, when I'm on tour, you know, the things that get you backstage, and I bloody hate them.
Right.
And I've got thousands of them kicking about at home, you know, that get under the doors and God knows what, and just generally in the bottoms of all my bags. So I'm not a fan of lanyards because I've been burdened with a great many over the years. And now I kind of tend to proceed more on the, well, don't you know who the fuck I am? What do I need a pass for? if I throw a tantrum of sufficient intensity, they'll think, yeah, he must actually be a singer.
I can't help thinking that, bearing in mind everybody is telling me, and you, indeed yourself, you've told me, and Lucy's definitely told me, that you are mellower now than you were in the past. I'm struggling to believe it's taken so long for you to start to do that.
I am mellower, but it's all relative, isn't it?
It's a relative mellow. I like that as an episode title, actually.
Relative to likely to explode over anything at any moment, which is how I used to be. There's just like, you know, a simmering thing now instead.
Right. So what I think you need, I'm going to put it out there now, is I think you need like a Man from U.N.C.L.E. type attaché case.
Ah, now we're talking. This is appealing to me more than the last.
Yeah, I thought it might do. Which one, by the way, Kuryakin or Solo?
Definitely Kuryakin.
I'm with you.
But I will have, obviously, I'll need to stop dying my hair.
Yeah. Right, anyway.
And to lose a bit of weight and look a bit more Russian. But apart from that...
I think it's the wait and probably 30 years, but anyway. So a Man from U.N.C.L.E. style attaché case, right? Beautifully cut out and prepared.
Oh, yeah, with the cut-out bits.
With the cut-out bits, yeah. Not with stuff just chucked in. I mean, properly cut out.
I see.
With your touring podcast rig. And then, I mean, obviously you'll leave it somewhere. Obviously, that's a given. But at least for one trip.
Full of stuff that I've blagged from blokes who used to work for a famous microphone company.
There is a bit of that, and I might now be having to blag you a second SM7B. I've no idea I'm going to do that.
That was sort of a... That was just a hint.
Was it just a hint there? I thought you did it beautifully.
Thank you.
But I think we need a mobile rig. I think looking at your slight faffiness as you came on, and I didn't mean that in a horrible way, but as you were trying to get your shit together.
There was a great deal of that going on.
Yeah, we need to take that away from you, I think. I think in your position, I don't think we should be... That should be something that has to be part of your life.
Do you know what I really need more than anything else? Is I need a Zapata-style... You know how those comedy cinematic Mexicans always had... That kind of crossed belts of bullets.
Oh, yes.
I need one of those, full of those adapters for headphones, you know, just all the way across, because no matter how many of those fucking things I have, they're always gone before I plug anything in and I have to turn the house upside down looking for one, which is part of the reason I was late this morning. I was turning the house upside down looking for a headphone adapter. So I think a Zapata-style bullet belt full of whatever it is, it's a quarter-inch stereo jack adapters.
Eighth of an inch to quarter-inch, those babies.
Preferably gold-plated.
Always gold-plated.
Which would go well with the hat that I would look like a twat in as well.
I hate to say this, but I think I know exactly where mine are. I think I can actually put my hand on mine right now.
That's why I hate and despise you. I know there was a reason.
I'm pleased if that's it. Anyway.
Yes.
So, yes, we need a mobile rig for you. I think that would take a little bit of trauma and stress out of your life. And then what we need to do is we need to put one of those Apple AirTags in it.
Oh, yeah. With a battery that doesn't go flat. Because I've got AirTags and they're all flat. You know, and I have to keep unscrewing them and putting back new batteries in, which seem to last about a day and a half.
Right.
I don't know where I'm getting these batteries, but obviously the wrong place because they don't seem to last any time.
No, maybe Poundland is not the solution for your batteries. Maybe not.
Or the Catherine House Hospice charity shop. I've been getting them there.
Which I think is very, very decent of you, but they're clearly not very good, are they?
Probably. Some bastard is donating flat batteries to the Catherine House Hospice shop. That's the problem right there.
Thinking some do-gooder will have them.
I'll raise a bit of money. I'll cause someone a lot of pain, obviously, but it'll raise a bit of money. That's what he's thinking, he or she.
Back obviously to the trip, back to the cruise.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
You seem to have a smashing time. We were going to try and talk in the airport, but that all fell apart, didn't it? I was going to ask you why, actually.
Well, it was your fault. You didn't phone me up.
Well, you didn't tell me when to.
Oh, all right then. Maybe it was my fault that it was your fault.
There might have been... I tell you where the fault probably lies, in the fact that I expected you might be forthcoming with more details and I should know better.
Hmm. You should. A, I'm a bloke.
Yes.
B, I'm a musician, which multiplies those implications by at least 50.
Yes, it factors it somewhat, doesn't it?
I've been trying to explain this to my family. They say... Well, why, blah, blah, blah? I go, well, I didn't ask him. Well, why not? Because I'm a bloke. But, and I'm a musician. Oh, all right, yeah, fair enough.
Your new kind of moniker should be H with like a 5 or something or a 6. So you're like H to the factor of 5.
Yeah, and other people would have to work out
what that meant.
What that number is referring to. Not that it would be a number. Well, a 5 is a number, isn't it?
5, yes.
Let's get that clearly established for the listeners. 5 is a number, folks.
Mm. It's the perfect numbers of fingers on a Kit Kat, but it's never been done.
Oh, yeah.
I think so. Yeah.
Do you know, as you've said that, and this is a bit spooky, the fingers of my right hand, well, if you count my thumb as a finger, were resting on the five black notes on my piano keyboard.
Ah.
And first of all, there are only five black notes in an octave. And second of all, they look exactly like the fingers of a Kit Kat. Just as you happen to say that. And I've always thought that from the first day I ever set eyes on Mrs. Robinson's piano at intake infants and became fascinated with watching the keys go up and down from sideways, because when I was small, I couldn't see the keys. I could just see that the shapes.
That triangle.
The shape. If you imagine looking at them sideways, like little castle walls, you know, as they went up and down and made the little up and down thing. What you need to do now is just sort of lie on the floor or something, look up at your own piano and then press a couple of keys, and all you'll be able to see is the sides going up and down.
I'm with you. I'm totally with you. But the point I was making was that, bearing in mind it pivots down from one end to the other, if you look from the side, it does look like a slight triangle. Like, it looks like an elongated triangle.
Right. Well, that's not what I'm talking about.
No, I know it's not.
You're confusing the listeners.
Confusing the listeners by not saying what I'm seeing.
Exactly
that.
It's been a problem my whole life as well.
Yeah. I can't believe the two of us then were both pressing keys on pianos and then having a disagreement about the fact that it looks different.
It's one of my earliest fascinations that I can remember, is looking at Mrs. Robinson, whose name I could still remember. Maybe she was Robertson. She might be Robertson.
whose name I can still remember. Maybe it was Robertson.
And I'm watching the little castellated shapes as she pressed the keys down on the piano. I remember that and being quite fascinated. And then later on, seeing the black notes and being fascinated by the fact that they looked like Kit Kats. They were my two very early memories.
And actually, at school, because I guess it was probably an upright piano, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
And obviously, we all used to sit around on the floor, hence the reason why we were always looking up at that key. And on a piano, on an older piano, the sides were a different colour, weren't they, on the keys? Because on a new modern kind of thing, they're all white, but they used to be like more of a different slightly colour, so it even stuck out even more.
Yeah. Well, they tended to be ivory, didn't they, on the really old ones?
On the really old
that
ones, yeah.
That tended to yellow over time a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, a little Woodbine-esque.
They were a little, exactly, like... Sir Les Paterson's teeth. That kind of colour.
Right. Back to the cruise.
Yes.
Because obviously we spoke on the Saturday before your first show.
God, you're a stickler for detail.
I am, yes. Indeed.
Yes.
I mean, literally, the day. With obviously young Nicholas.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm there now. I'm in that cabin with that man.
Who was top value.
Yes, and he kept his clothes on.
He did keep his clothes on, actually.
For nearly all the time.
Well, certainly while I was with you, he did.
Mm.
What the two of you got up to. Now, of the things that have come out that people have mentioned, there is some discussion about the fact that you were only seen over the course of the entire cruise in a single T-shirt. Every piece of photographic evidence has you in the same shirt.
That is true, yeah. I took bloody loads of clothes, didn't wear any of them, which I think is one of those things you do, isn't it? When you go away, you think, oh, I'd better have that. Oh, I'll need a few of those. The only thing I ever wear more than one of is socks.
Well, we all wear more of one of them. I always wear two.
Well, yes. I was referring to...
pairs.
Well, hundreds. I tend to get through hundreds of socks, but nothing else. Because I tend to wobble about in a pair of core blimeys. I did change trousers for the sake of glamour for when I was doing the photo sessions or being seen.
Right.
Then I'd put some jeans on. But black jeans. I don't possess any blue jeans, as you know.
I do know that. We all know that.
I've never had a pair. Well, yeah. I have had a pair. That's nonsense. But it's been decades.
Well, they're too faddy, aren't they? I mean, they just keep coming into fashion. I mean, there's no way you can compete with that.
Well, everybody's got a pair of blue jeans. Exactly. So, red rag to a bull, obviously. Yeah.
I feel very much in a different crowd to you now, because I think most of my jeans are blue.
Yeah, well, in that sense, you are in a different crowd, but right. I wouldn't let it worry you.
Oh, no, 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 no. It's actually quite reassuring.
Yeah, exactly. So, yes, I did only... I had that T-shirt made specifically for the cruise by the lovely Mark Kennedy, because he sent the logo through for the Marillion shirts, which I thought was an absolute cracker. And I knew that we'd do a black one because we've learned from bitter experience that if we make any other colour, they don't really sell. But I wanted a light blue one. So I said, can you do me a light blue one as a one-off? And he said, well, yeah. So they made me a one. Well, in fact, I had two because I ordered one in a medium and one in a small, or one in a large and one in a medium. I can't remember. And I wore the larger, and I gave the smaller one to Jo Rothery because she expressed an interest in owning one. So they're the only two that exist. And I wore it for the whole cruise. It's true. It didn't seem to get dirty, so I kept putting it on. Mm. And it didn't smell.
Mm. Nice. I'm loving your work. I mean, we've answered the query. I mean, people have levelled at you that you wore the same T-shirt, and basically you've come back and said, yes, I did.
I sort of did. I put a black one on to go out and groove around the thing in the evenings. But yeah, during the day, I was most definitely in the light blue, which I felt was tropical and therefore should be worn.
I'm with you on the fact that I've never understood why tour T-shirts have always been black. I mean, I do understand it. I get it for all the reasons, but I have a thing about not liking black tour T-shirts.
Well, me too, and I've always gone black. No way, no way. Let's have grey, or let's have this, or let's have that, or let's do a white one. Shit, everybody's on holiday. And we've brought them all back, just about unsold, and the black ones have all gone, and the others, you know, hang about. So it's what can you do with the public?
I have two Marillion T-shirts in my collection. I have the drum kit one, with Mr. Mosley for president,
yeah,
on the back, and that's not black. That's a grey.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, that's a grey.
Well, he wouldn't have worn it because all he ever wears is
he's black. Yeah. Well, he couldn't wear this one. It's mine. And then I've got a blue Holidays in Eden launch party T-shirt from the Borderline.
I say,
going all the way back to whenever that was, 91, whatever that date was. I think it was 91. Which has got what was the new logo at the time, the square logo that was on the Cover My Eyes single release. Yes, yes, yes. Which has got that on the front and then just the date in the back, and that's in blue, and that's why I like it. Mm. Can't get Carl, in it, but you know.
Carl Glover did a summer T-shirt with the Brave artwork on it, the Brave face, covered in splashes of bright colours. It was a white T-shirt with the Brave album cover, you know, that face and the scribble, all covered in splashes of colour, and I loved that. I don't know what I did with it. I think it just got old and faded away and got sent to the Catherine House hospice shop with all the batteries. Maybe I've been buying my own batteries back. That could have been a problem.
Now that you see, that's a lovely story. I love the circular nature of that. I think absolutely beautiful. Actually, the other one I used to have, and I haven't got it anymore, was white T-shirt, actually, was the Uncool as Fuck T-shirt.
Oh, that was a good T-shirt, yeah. Well, yeah, that was a good one. And I've always... thought that the Kelly one with the drawing of the Mini Moog on it is a yeah. really cool shirt, but I've never owned one.
No.
But I might get one or order it in a special colour just because I can.
The one I didn't like of all of those was actually yours.
Oh, right.
Just because I thought that it was a bit of a weird kind of shape on the front, wasn't it? It was pointing up your nose.
It was that microphone, wasn't it, with
your accoutrements.
The tambourines and maracas and stuff dangling off it.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, you know, I'm a singer. What am I going to do?
I don't know, actually. That's the thing. I'm not quite sure what that would look like, anything else.
Well, you don't have to wear it. It's all right. It's fine.
Well, I never even bought one.
Oh, yeah, right now. Yeah. Oh, it's a bit sad, isn't it?
Made a decision at the beginning I didn't like it. It's all right.
And it was grey with, I think the detail was in pink as well, wasn't it? So it was sort of grey and pink.
But you see, I like grey and pink. I'm a big fan of pink. Pink's my favourite colour.
Well, then, now we're getting somewhere, aren't we, Anthony? I think we should just let that rest now.
Oh, what's wrong with that? Me and Superman, exactly the same. Superman's favourite colour was pink.
You're telling me you like grey and pink, but you didn't like that T-shirt because it was grey and pink?
No, I didn't like the design on the T-shirt. The colouring was absolutely fine.
All right, then. All right. I'm bored with this conversation.
Yeah, should we move on?
Can we get back to the boat?
I think we should get back to the boat. So come on then. After we spoke... What happened then? What did you do? What did you get up to? What did we miss?
Blimey. Well, the well, we did a show, didn't we? Was that the first one?
That was the first one.
Right, okay. Well, I was worried about that first one because I'd had a chest cold, which some might say I'm still not quite clear of. I'm still coughing up clag. And it was particularly debilitating the whole time I was in Miami. I flew out to Miami on the Monday and the boat didn't sail till the Friday, but I spent most of it in bed because I was full of cold and feeling cruddy. And so then we got on the boat and the first show was the Saturday, the day after. And I think I just turned a corner on the Thursday and felt a little bit better on the Friday, the day we were boarding the ship. And so I thought, well, I'm going in the right direction now, thank the Lord. So I was worried, you know, because you're not going to know if your voice is going to last the whole show till you're about three quarters of the way through the show, to be honest. And so I went on stage with sort of fingers and toes crossed, hoping... It would be A, all right, and B, it would open up during the show rather than crap out. And it did. It opened up and it didn't crap out, and I sang pretty well. So that was a huge relief. So we had a good one. And Simon Phillips, the genius drummer, spent the whole show behind the mixing desk, and because he's a bit of a mate of Ian's. And approached Ian afterwards and said, that was amazing, man. And told him how much his wife had enjoyed it as well. And very complimentary about my performance in particular, which was lovely. And the following, was it that night or was it the following day? I think it was that night. That evening, Simon Phillips' own band, they were on the pool stage, and before he went on stage, I just happened to be milling about, and he came and found me and prodded me on the shoulder and said, "Hello, I just want to tell you what a knockout show you put together this afternoon or this evening." So that was lovely to hear from him, and then I went and actually leant on the barrier and watched his band's set. And they were incredible, and I do mean incredible, as musicians, utterly off the scale. Made Sting's band look a bit average, if you can imagine that. Just phenomenal. You know, all jazzers and chops for days and all of that, but nonetheless, I don't think I've ever seen anything like it. I mean, you couldn't single one of them out because they were all incredible, incredible players. So I sort of stood there with my jaw on the floor for the whole gig. In a way, all the more shocked that Simon had taken the trouble to come and tell me how much he'd enjoyed what I do. And then the following day, we were playing again. And in the afternoon, the Adrian Ballou power trio, as they call them, was playing immediately before us on the same stage in the theatre. So I went down early to watch that because I'm a big fan of Adrian. And, you know, and I know Julie, I've worked with Julie in Sweden, and so the bass player. And so I went with Nick Beggs and with my mate David Hussey, the actor. And we sat in up at the back of the theatre where I kind of hoped to minimise how much I got disturbed. Because that was another thing. I mean, it was constant. The selfies and the autographs were utterly unrelenting whenever I walked out of the cabin, which is lovely, but, you know, can get a bit much. But that's what they're there to do, so blah, blah, blah. But anyway, I managed to hide in at the back of the theatre and watch Adrian's set. And that was fantastic as well. I mean, he's just a total genius. And so imbued with joy. Every moment is joyous and a little bit of a laugh, even though it's extremely complex. So watched that, went backstage immediately after that for two reasons. You know, one to just tell him how much I'd enjoyed it, and two, because I'd got to be backstage to get ready for our show because we were following him on. You know, and saying to him, I don't know how the bloody hell we're going to follow that. That was just amazing. And he said, oh, well, where, are you playing next? I went, yeah. He said, oh, well, let me, because he was wet through. He said, let me have a shower and I'll come straight back and I'll watch your set. And I thought, he probably won't, you know. And we went on and we played, and that, I don't know if that was better than the first night. I think I sang better, possibly slightly better on the first night than I did on the second. But everyone I've spoken to said the second night was better than the first. But they were both great. And when we got off stage after the second night, no sooner really were we off stage than somebody came up and said, oh, we got Adrian Ballou and his band, they want to say hi. So I went back down the stairs to talk to them, and his jaw was on the floor, and he just said, that was amazing, it was phenomenal. So to receive that kind of praise from geniuses is something I've not really had before. So I felt very affirmed, or whatever word you'd use. Proud of myself, proud of my band, proud of my band and proud of myself. And I kind of came home from that cruise thinking about Marillion in a different way, because we're all very self-effacing as people, and we do tend to moderate one another. If anybody starts getting a bit up themselves, you know, the rest of us bat them back down. And that's great, and it makes for a nice atmosphere. But I think sometimes we probably should just stick our chest out a bit more than we do, the five of us. And I came home feeling very proud of me band and myself in a way that I probably never have, purely because I'd been given the nod by these geniuses. I mean, obviously I've been very fortunate over the years for a great many people to pay me compliments about my art and my words and my singing and the band. And I've always said thanks very much. But when one of your peers at the very top of the cone, as it were, comes and says that, you kind of go, bloody hell, maybe they've got a point, you know. You know, when other people pay me compliments, I think, well, we're a lot better than a pub band, aren't we? Yeah, they're right. We're much better than a pub band. But when Adrian Belew comes and, you know, is genuinely knocked out, you think, hang on a minute, maybe we're on another level to how we've... to our self-image, you know, this self-image I've had anyway for years and years and years. So it was extremely gratifying. And, you know, I don't know. I'm not sure I should be talking to you, Anthony. I'm terrific.
I've made a point of staying quiet.
Yeah, you did, didn't you?
Yeah.
You did. You did. I'm just going to climb down off this high horse now and...
Well, I think you should step down graciously, Freddie-esque, with your big train behind you, you know, and enjoy that moment.
I'll take the crown off and just put it where I can reach it, but I'll have it out, you know, have it out of the way.
Yeah, well, you need to, but be careful because the battery and the air tag that's attached to it is gone. So don't leave it behind.
I know, bloody cheap battery. so. After that long, whatever it was, speech, diatribe, I came back from about with a rosy glow of, oh, maybe we're not shit, you know, really. And so that was lovely. And when on the very last night of the cruise, there was an artist's party, you know, just before we finished the whole thing in one of the bars, and I wandered down there. I was a bit late because I was doing Vibes' homework. He sent me a Logic file, being Vibes. You know, oh, I know you're on a cruise liner and, you know, being adored by geniuses, but could you just do my homework? So I got a Logic file through of a samba that he's supposed to be creating as part of his GCSE. And I'm a bit stuck with this. Dad, have you got any ideas? So I spent about 4 hours on the last day, cross-legged with my headphones on, sambering, in my cabin with the agogo bells and the quakers and the... and building a samba for his nibs and doing a bit of vocals, you know, and stuff to give it the sound of Rio, man. What's he called? That bloke? I can never remember his name, even though it never really leaves me either. Harrison Ford built his studio. He sent a message.
Oh, yes. Guess, oh, blooming heck, now you've... Yes.
He was the guy who wrote... Oh,
yes, yeah.
Oh, Sergio Mendes.
That's the one.
So I was channeling Sergio majorly, whilst not ripping him off totally, and trying to turn his melodies inside out so I could nick them without nicking them. I was doing that for hours, so I was a bit late to the party. And when I got there... You know, it was just incredible. This sort of sense of respect that I got off everybody. Like, oh, it's him. Rather than, oh, it's him. You know.
How did it translate when you got home?
Well, I never got the fanfare, Anthony. You know, I have given up. Give up the hope of a fanfare. That's another T-shirt. I never got the fanfare, but no, it was nice to come home. Was she in? I can't remember if she was in. She might have been out, or maybe she was in. I think she was out. I think she got back shortly after. She was probably doing the school run or something. Oh no! She was on her way out to do the school run. So that's right, and so was Vibes, because the plane landed at 6 a.m.
Yeah.
So my taxi driver of choice, Devinda, was there to pick me up, looking very Shakespearean because he let his hair grow a bit. He brought me home, and I got back about 10 to 8 in the morning. So they were just on their way out the door. to do the school run. So I had time to say hello, and they didn't really have time to get the trumpets out of the cases, to be honest, because they were a bit... they were rushing to get out. So the trumpets remain in the cases, and the flags were not waved. But nonetheless, I did feel welcome.
Oh, good. You wrote some diary while you were away.
I did. Well,
did you write any more, or was that the sum? Was that the sum?
No, I didn't write much. Actually, while I was on the boat, I didn't write much because I was doing stuff most of the time. There's something else I could tell you, but we'd have to edit it out. Well, once we've stopped recording, say, what was that you were going to tell
me? I will do.
I'll tell you. It was quite amusing, if you have a dark sense of humour. And if you wish to tempt fate to the max, and we've shown that
we're good on both those counts.
We've shown we've got no problem there. But anyway...
somebody did point out that we didn't mention Lucy at all when we were talking about that, well, which is probably wise.
Struck down with a terminal illness. No, well, that's not... You don't want to be, you know, wishing that on other people, do you? Unless it's you and me.
Yeah.
Each other. So I wrote quite a lot while I was in Miami. And obviously one of the things I spent ages writing down one day was my day from hell with my grandson, which I think we're gonna let the Purples have, aren't we? I think we should let them have that because quite a few people have asked. And I just had to clear it all with Sophie so to check she wasn't either felt offended or exposed by it. And she doesn't. She's fine. So we can let that into the world. I wrote all that down. It took ages. And I wrote down what I was doing in Miami as well. So I've got quite a bit of, from the moment I went out the door to go to the airport and what I was doing in Miami, which was basically being in bed most of the time.
Yeah, which we put in 200, didn't we?
Oh, did we do that?
Yeah.
Well, there's more of it, I think. There's more of that. And then when I was on the boat, I think I just wrote down, you know, I even published that and read it out once, didn't I, where I'd just done bullet points.
Bullet points.
Because I hadn't had time to flesh it out. So I wrote bullet points down as well in the hope of not forgetting everything. Because I did go off there were 2 days off, but I was working on one of them and on the other. Oh, and I got up and sang with Lonely Robot as well.
Mm.
I'd forgotten about that, which was which went down well. But I was actually utterly hammered by the time that I got up because it was late in the evening, to quote Paul Simon. And we'd already done the first show. That's right, we'd done the first show. I'm getting all these days mixed up, I'm sure I am. But after the first show, Lonely Robot were playing at the at one of the other little theatres. And I went and got up on stage and sang a BV on a couple of songs. And John sang really well. And it was great to be on stage with young Kaylee. Kaylee is Rick Armstrong's niece, so he's his brother Mark Armstrong, who was also on the boat. She's Mark's daughter, and I met her a couple of times before, and she's absolutely delightful and a really good singer. So it was great to get up on the stage and, you know, nudge her off a mic and be nudged off a mic by her, you know, playfully whilst hammered. And at one point, I gave her my cabin room key. And I know how that looks, but that's not what I meant. It was just a sort of joke because she'd said something. What did she say? She whispered something in my ear about my singing, which was quite complimentary. So I fished in my pocket to give her $10 for comedy value. And I couldn't find anything except my room key, so I gave her that. And then I came off stage and went to bed. And, of course, I got halfway down the corridor and realised I couldn't get in. So not only that, but she was still on stage, so I couldn't get it back either. So I had to send an emissary to the stage to retrieve my room key. Anyway, where was I? So there was an artist party on the last night, and that was great, you know. That's what I was going to say. So one of the days off in Cozumel, I was able to get off the boat. So I got off the boat with my friend Conrado Zuckerman and his friend Tufik. Tufik sounds a bit like Tufik. Sorry, I don't understand, I'm Tufik. But he wouldn't get that joke because he's Mexican. In fact, he's not even Mexican, he's Lebanese. So he's got a Lebanese-Mexican friend called Tufik. Tufik, and Nick Beggs, who was probably internally singing that to himself but was too polite to point it out. So Conrado, Tufik, and the lovely Nick, Tufik and the lovely Nick, we got off the boat. And Conrado, being a Mexican and having great aplomb, had already booked a restaurant that was a cab ride away from the docks. And where he'd found it, I do not know. But he'd found it and booked it. And we went there and had a lovely long lunch whilst being serenaded by Mayans with marimbas. You know, so there I was, lapping at my guacamole, listening to the marimbas and knocking back the tequilas, as you must, with the chaps. Nick didn't have any. He's a bit of a lightweight on the hard liquor.
I'm surprised by that.
He is that crazy sober. Maybe that's why. Maybe it just takes him into some kind of critical area. In need of urgent care of some description, medical or psychological. But we had a very nice long lunch, and then we got back on the boat. So that was... I've done what? I can't remember how many of those cruises I've done. Frenchie reckons 6 or 7, and I can only remember 3 or 4. But it was definitely the nicest one we've done in terms of A, the way we were treated, which was really nicely by the cruise line, and B, the atmosphere and a feeling of the artists particularly, but I mean the feeling's always been great off the punters, if you pardon the no disrespect, I can't think of another term, but the audience, and I don't like calling them fans, so that sounds a bit deprecating as well, doesn't it? But the paying people who'd come to see the beat combos are always very, very nice, and they were. But this time, there just seemed to be a nicer overall atmosphere between the artists as well. So it was great. Even Mosley enjoyed it. And he hates them.
Yeah. Yeah. He seemed very content when he was sat in the captain's hat.
Yes. Oh, I forgot all about that. Yeah, going up to meet, be invited up onto the bridge by the boss was quite something, because... I believe there are certain artists and certain bands that have asked in the past if there's any chance of going on the bridge and been politely told no, no chance. Mm. But it turned out that the captain and the first officer had seen our show. They'd been hiding at the back and had seen our show and were blown away. So he invited us up to the bridge to have a look, see what we thought. And I couldn't get over how much space there was up there. I mean, you could have taken a football and had a kick about. Of course, you don't want to do that in case it bounces off a knob and steers the ship into an island or something.
There's a good chance it would have bounced off a knob.
Well, Beggs was up there.
Indeed. Was it a bit Star Trek-esque? Because Star Trek always seemed like a big bridge, didn't it? You know, when Bill Shatner was sat in the big jet.
It was a bit Star Trek-esque. I'll tell you what it reminded me of. The actual central console, there was lots of consoles. It was a bit like a top-of-the-pops celebrity chef's kitchen as well, in the sense that there wasn't just the one thing. There was like little islands of other things where you could go and press other buttons and look at other dials.
Fire the torpedoes.
the bow doors, that kind of, you know, with a bit of gaffer tape over it saying, don't press this. The central console was eerily similar to Peter Gabriel's mixing desk at Real World, the one that wraps around. It was that shape, you know, the big thing and then two things that are either side that sort of wrap around you, all covered in buttons and switches and little dials and meters and God knows what. And then this amazing killer view through this, you know, monstrous glass panel of the bow of the ship and the sea beyond it. But then there was also that place where at the side that sticks out so you can see down the side of the ship. You know what I mean? They always have the two little wings that stick out. Oh, and if you stand on in the, and I went and stood there, and there's a glass floor, so you're actually standing over the open sea, which is a bit woo. And then you can look along the side of the ship, so that when they're mooring, or you know pulling into port, it's for parking basically. You know,
it's a wing mirror, isn't it? Beep, 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 beep. You were stood in the wing mirror.
I don't know if they've got reversing beeps. You know, you were about to destroy a small town. Warning. I don't know if they have that.
Get the fuck out of the way in some kind of neutral voice.
What he did
voice.
Say, interestingly, that the propellers, or the, what do they call them? The screws, don't they, on a ship? Yeah, they're not called propellers. No, siree, they're called screws, I think. The ones on that actually move the boat through the water, or power the boat through the water, the ship through the water, are 360 degree reversible on those. So they can actually turn them right around, so they're pointing the other way for braking, for serious, you know, so if they need to brake in a hurry and slow the ship down, they can, in emergency times, they can twist them right round and power them the other way. And they also have two more in the bows which face sideways, so they can fire those up to move the ship side. It's not just the rudder. They have additional propellers side-facing for intricate sort of sideways manoeuvres, which I guess they use when they're docking.
Parallel parking.
Or if they need to turn left bloody quickly, you know, after someone shouted iceberg, that kind of thing.
I imagine that's a term you don't hear shouted on a ship very often. Well, we did briefly touch on Diary, but I think other than you reading out a list of bullet points, I'm going to suggest, bearing in mind we've been talking for an hour, that we just go all the way through. This is like a stream of consciousness this week.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Because we have been going for over an hour.
Well, I've got a meeting at the studio at 1, so I will have to run in a bit.
And I was going to ask you all about about your painting, but tell you what, we said we'd put that bit of Diary for the Purples into some form of odds. So why don't we reconvene in the next couple of days and talk about the painting competition and throw that bit of diary in.
Yeah, I'm game.
That
absolutely.
Worked.
Absolutely. That was quite...
Just another reason to be purple, folks. Just another reason.
Just another reason.
And actually, we need to apologise as well, don't we? Because we have actually missed a week in all of this. In all of the shenanigans, we did actually miss
a week,
didn't we?
It's only the second one we've ever missed, isn't it?
I know, we've not done bad, have we, really, for all that time?
We missed one Christmas, didn't we? Was that what we did?
I think we did. I think we might have given ourselves a week off one Christmas.
I don't know. The selfie.
I think you said to Lynetta, the last thing I want to do is talk to that twat next week, and I think it worked his way back.
That's not what happened, Anthony. I love you, even though I wish you got cancer before I do. But I do love you.
That's not going away, is it?
Oh, imagine the regret if it actually happens. Ah, well, we can laugh. If you can't laugh about that, what can you laugh about, Anthony?
Well, indeed. You'll have washing. I was going to say you'll have washing to do, but it's just that one T-shirt, isn't it?
400 pairs of socks, one T-shirt. Yeah.
Well, I'll leave you to that, and I'll leave you to your meeting.
If I wore underwear, there'd be underwear as well. But as it is, I don't, so that never gets dirty.
No, no. No, you're not a lot of work when you come back off the road, are you?
Not in the washing sense, no.
Not in the washing sense. That's not where your maintenance is high.
No, that's an area of respite.
Right, well, I'll see you for 202.
Okay.
But in the meantime, we'll find some time to do some form of odds and screws cast thing.
Okay, that'll be lovely. And you can all hear about my day from hell with my grandson.
That sounds wrong, you know, when you say it like that.
I know, but it was. Yeah.
But it was, yeah. I know, I've read it.
It was a hell of a day.
It was a hell of a day. Right, well, look out for that, Perps. And you have a good rest of your day, Mr. H.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
Get some sleep.
It's on my list of things to do. It's an unticked box. Thank you, Anthony. I'll see you very soon.
Hi, it's Pete from Marillion here, and I've just popped along to Corona Cottage, where, of course, the Corona Diaries is recorded and put together. And I'm up on the top floor where requests and messages are brought in. And I've just popped in today to wish both Steve and Ant well and to say congratulations on episode 201 of the Diaries. I missed saying congratulations to episode 200 because I was a bit busy. I was being a bit selfish thinking about myself, to be honest, but I said I was a bit busy. And they seemed to think that was fine. But suggested I'd pop along today. And so here I am. Congratulations, guys. That's great, isn't it? I bet no one thought when you started this that you'd get to 201. I'm very proud for you both. And what an amazing thing to have happened. Right, I'm going to leave you all now. Enjoy the rest of today's show.
See you next week. Well, I won't hear you next week. No, I won't. Hear me next week. That's what I meant.
Thanks for listening to the Corona Diaries. It featured Steve Hogarth with the insights and me, Ant Short, with the questions. If you enjoyed the podcast, please consider subscribing and maybe leaving a review, as this will help others find it. You could even share with other like-minded souls, should the mood take you. This has been an A Short Stories production.